Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.
Hello and welcome, everybody. My name is Adam Wozniak, and I'm joined here today with my good friends and co-hosts, Ryan Smith and Darren Parkinson. How you doing, guys?
Doing good.
Doing great, Adam. How you doing today?
Doing well. Doing missed y'all last week. All right, and today we have a very special guest who's good enough to join us today. He's the CEO of OneCare, Mr. Gary Austin.
How you doing, Hi. Gary? Glad to be here this morning.
Great to have you. Great to have you. Just to start us off here, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a serial entrepreneur and been involved in starting companies since 2004 in the technology space. Prior to that, I did some other things that were not technology. But my passion has always been taking ideas and turning them into businesses. So that's one of the first things that I did was in the credit card industry. I started a company that that secured rebates from credit card transactions. When you use a card at a participating merchant, mm-hmm. you captured the rebates right. and deposited into a savings account.
So like that 1% cash back kind of thing?
Except it was the merchant providing the rebate.
Oh, okay.
So it was a loyalty program for the merchant and a loyalty program for the bank issuing the card.
Right.
So we use that as a way to help people save money for the future. And so I patented that and launched that company in 2000. It was the launch date. So, and then after that, I got into healthcare. So,
switch.
So I started a company called Clearwave. And that company is the first patient self-check-in kiosk for healthcare. So it eliminates the clipboard. When you go to a doctor's office or a hospital, we already have the clipboard stored in the system, and you just scan your driver's license or a credit card at the kiosk when you check in, and it downloads your clipboard and does the real-time insurance eligibility check and checks you in. So no filling out the paperwork, and they don't make mistakes at the front desk keying all that information in. So
that's awesome.
And then from there, I started OneCare. So the genesis of OneCare was in 2010. I had a business partner that was the software developer, and I've always had a business partner in all the ventures I did. I was sort of the innovator and the marketer, the business concept developer, and then I had a partner that I'd work with that did the technology development. Mm-hmm. And so we had finished a project and looking to, you know, what we were going to do next. It was in healthcare, and my oldest son, Adam, got diagnosed with squamous cell sinus cancer, and we became okay. caregivers. So the challenges today in America and anywhere, but in a technology advanced company like the United States, families deliver 99% of all care. They get diagnosed and treated in hospitals and medical centers, but then they get released for, you know, the daily management of whatever condition they have by the family, and families don't have any tools to do that. So,
right.
So we were in that place. We were caregivers without training or education on being a caregiver in the home, or without any tools to do it with. And so we were looking for solutions, and there was nothing available. So I saw that as a need, and doing research on that, 60 million Americans today are primary caregivers for people in the home with a chronic disease or terminal illness. And started OneCare when we found out the need was that great. And it's an incredible challenge for that primary caregiver in the home. So it's the purpose for OneCare is to provide the tools and the training and the technology to help families do that job of managing a patient in the home with excellence. And we also train and certify them for that on our system and the patient for, we certify them for self-care.
So how do you do that? I mean, like, how do you, I guess, physically implement that? Do y'all have like training centers, or do y'all have they come to you, you go to them for training?
It's a cloud-based web and mobile from anywhere to anywhere solution. So we provide the technology, and they enroll as a subscriber to our service, and we use home care agencies or nurse case managers to do the enrollment. And so they have a clinical person that's connected to them, but the day-to-day care then is delivered by the family. We get the care plan for that person loaded into the system, and all their an assessment on them, load all the data, and then we deliver the care plan tasks through text or email, voicemail, or a device like the Amazon Alexa.
Do you have functionality with the Alexa?
Yes.
Oh, that's neat.
So we connected to OneCare. Alexa is a virtual caregiver in the home.
Hmm.
Wow.
Like, what kind of task would she, like, I mean, is she like walking people through steps of something? Or
she'll wake up from prompts from our platform to remind a person when it's time to do their tasks daily. So the things that we manage are what we call self-test management, which would be checking your vital signs. Let's say you have diabetes, it would be checking your blood sugar, or if you have heart disease, checking your blood pressure or congestive heart failure, step on a scale, things like that. Mm-hmm. So there'd be a device that would be used for that. She could remind you to do those tasks, or take your medicine, you know, plan your meals. Usually with chronic diseases, there's some restricted dietary issues. So you have a particular type of diet you're supposed to eat, or things you're not supposed to eat. And then exercise. We track all these things through telemetry, wireless machine-to-machine communication from a device communicating to our back-end system. And then education. We deliver education through a gamified learning management system. So it's like playing a game until you beat the level, going through each chapter of the course on type 2 diabetes or congestive heart failure. So we give that tool to the family and the patient, and they consume that education like playing a game. And when they beat the level, they go on to the next level. In essence, is doing it, you've scored 100 on the test.
Right.
So you know it perfectly before you go to step 2. And when you finish the course, we certify you for that, because you've proven that you know it perfectly. You can't get to the end of the course without scoring 100 on every test. So when the patient really understands how to manage their condition perfectly, it's a game changer. And then if the family members also participate, this is the biggest, I think, missing link in care today, is the family resource has 99% of the care responsibility. None of the tools are training. And so if we really engage that family, we train them, and to a level that they know it, and they know that they know it, is empowering to the family, and it changes the environment in the home.
Right.
So we see a lot of behavior change as the
key. It just seems like something that can make it, you know, that would make a huge difference.
Yes. So we built an adherence management platform that runs programs. The goal of our solution is to change the patient's behavior so that they're adherent with their doctor's care plan tasks.
And like habits and...
Yes,
and
change it, build new healthy habits. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And the solution that we've developed could really apply to anything, because there's virtually no industry that doesn't rely to some extent on adherence to a set of instructions to do the job, to carry out the functions that industry requires. And adherence, the higher the adherence, the better the performance. So this adherence management platform that runs programs could apply to anything. We just happen to have built it initially for healthcare. So the what is true with the behavioral sciences is that we're a product of our environment. And if you don't change the environment, then behavior is not going to change very much. And right. if you don't change behavior, the outcomes or the performance is not going to change very much. So what we were doing with our platform is we're changing the environment in the home, engaging the family and the patient, training them so they're competent, certified for what they do. And then that changes the behavior of the patient in the home, and that the and those improved patient behaviors improve outcomes and reduce cost.
Yeah, and a lot of, I guess, recovery is reliant on that adherence.
Exactly.
And progress, and, you know, some of these diseases, not, unfortunately, not the majority, but a lot of them, you can just, you can improve to a point where you don't even need as much, need as much care.
Right.
Right, and so that's...
Diseases can actually be cured.
Right.
Through proper adherence. With the right diet and exercise, type 2 diabetes can be cured. You can have normal blood sugar without medication anymore. And heart disease, the number one killer in America, the heart disease can be reversed. And the things, the calcium that builds up in your cardiovascular system can be reversed with the right diet and exercise. So we are losing people for preventable causes. 60% of all healthcare cost is for a preventable episode of care. And so a solution like this can have a profound impact if it was adopted on a widespread basis. So the entrepreneurial drive in healthcare is there, is alive and well. There's a lot of new innovation coming to market, and not just in healthcare. I think we are very fortunate to live in a country where you can have an idea to do something and you have the freedom to do it.
That's the dream.
That's the dream. So one of the things I would say to people that are looking at the possibility of starting a business, or they have an idea or a dream to do something. I think there are far too many people that, and I think you do need to count the cost to look at something and see, you know, what does how difficult this is going to be, and can we really do I have the what it takes to
like
do
a little
this?
Outline, just yeah. something.
So
yeah, it's funny you say that, because we've had a number of entrepreneurs that come through here, and one of the things they say is, I guess ignorance is bliss, because they didn't realize how much work and effort it was to get into what they do. They love what they do now, but if they look back, man, if I knew what I was getting into, I'm not sure I would have done it. So that's
right. You need to count the cost, and I think one of the key things for success for a new a person starting a business or contemplating that, the first thing, because nobody knows everything about any business. You have an idea, you think it's a great idea, find somebody that knows more about that subject than you do. Talk to as many of those people as you can. And then when you start talking to them, you're going to uncover other things that are necessary for that business that you don't know about.
Right. So like go into sponge mode and just soak up everything. Right?
Build yourself a very competent advisory board. Start with that. I mean, I think before you start the business, start the advisory board and say, this is what I'm trying to do. Can you help me with this? Like, would you be my advisor? Plans fail for lack of counsel, but with many advisors, they succeed. That's true. It's always been true. It always will be true, because nobody knows everything. And when people get their heads together and collaborate, it opens up all kinds of new opportunities. You're basically taking the IQs of all the people in the room and adding them together. And it's a good way of looking at it. Don't try to do it by yourself. Get as much help as you can forming the business concepts and the what you're going to do, how you're going to do it.
Core competencies.
Yes. And do that first. Because you'll avoid a lot of mistakes along the way, and get as far down the road with the business idea, even to the point of trying to create the minimum viable product. The closer you get to that, the better your probability of success before you start the business. Plus, if whatever you do requires capital that you don't have. Your advisors may be able to help you with that. They may contribute personally and or have a network of contacts that could help with that. And the further down the road you get with the concept, then you can actually show something, the much more likely you are to be able to secure whatever capital you need to launch it.
Now, with the advisory board advice, one thing that I kind of, a little roadblock in my mind whenever I'm thinking of something like that, is how do you factor in, like, I guess, like fair equity play? Like who gets what, you know? How do you get through that sort of like messy bog of a conversation?
Well, advisory board members quite often will do this just for the benefit of paying it forward. Mm-hmm. If you're friends of the family that you know that, you know, have certain skill sets, may be willing to do this just to help you because, you know, they like you or you're part of a family or you have a relationship with someone. It doesn't necessarily have to be something that's compensated, although can be. But determining valuations is very subjective thing. It's a thing that I guess that is one of the more complicated things. If you're the business owner, and there are no other partners, of course, that's the cleanest way to do something. Yeah. And you can put together an advisory board that are just, you know, friends and family that advise you. But if you're putting together a professional advisory board, it is not uncommon for them to be compensated. And generally, their compensation is stock in the company or stock options, more likely stock options. And their value of doing that, what they get in return is that they're getting something that has a low cost today that with their help could be significantly more valuable in the future based on the success of the company. And the owner of the company or the person starting the company would certainly have the lion's share of the stock typically. And then from there, you bring on advisors and other key employees and employees for companies to really thrive early stage. You want, you know, highly competent, skilled people involved, and they would be given ownership in the company as well. And a good attorney is my best suggestion for how you determine valuation and what the roles and responsibilities and what those are worth. A good attorney would be a first step in determining that. Or there are also valuation consultants, but they're generally they would be someone you would bring in a little further down the road. Good attorneys, good counsel, get a good CPA and get a good attorney. Yeah, for sure.
And just like to take that from the board of directors and take it to partners. Because later on, when you can evaluate what you've done and everything, when you're starting out, obviously you can see potential and involving people along your journey and collaborating with people that are smarter than you in certain aspects. And I like the question that Adam asked about how you go about divvying up in terms of the money coming in. How do you do that with partners? Is it similar, different? How do you go about that?
They're depending on the roles and responsibilities. There are good tools in the marketplace that can tell you, based on what a person is doing, what the going rate is for those positions, and then you look at that and what the estimated value of the company is, and you do a formula based on that. Obviously, as the company grows, it's going to increase in value, and as you get more and more employees in a company, they would be getting smaller and smaller percentages of ownership or smaller numbers of units of ownership. And because the people involved before them have sort of set the stage and have helped to start something and grow it. And so those that are the early adopters, would be more highly compensated and get bigger pieces of the pie than the ones that come later.
So you mentioned you were a serial entrepreneur. Have you always had the same partner? And if you haven't, or if you had, how did you find your partner?
I've had several partners, and It's not always been the same. For several of my businesses, it was the same person from the technology perspective, and I've tried to align myself with people that I know either personally or that have been referred to me by people that know me personally. Personal recommendations, I think, are very much preferred. Trying to hire somebody from a resume is very difficult. Unless you're working through a headhunter agency that has a very strong vetting process. But I think that someone where there is a track record and personal knowledge of their capabilities is the best way from my experience.
Yeah, and I love what you mentioned earlier about the board members and doing it because they're paying it forward. And I can relate so much to that. And I can't thank the KSU Entrepreneurship Center enough because it's filled with like-minded people like that. Because, I mean, it's no question that entrepreneurs have the busiest jobs in the world. They're balancing a bunch of different things they have. So their time is limited. And they still find the time out of their day to come there and pay it forward and mentor us. And it's great because, I mean, I have a few ideas that I'm pursuing right now. And I feel like I have an entire board there at my disposal to ask questions whenever I want, a whole series of mentors. And it's so powerful. And I love that aspect of entrepreneurism because a lot of people think it's this cutthroat world where nobody wants to help. People want to steal your ideas. But the thing that I've gotten from it is it's people just wanting to help and just collaborate. And whether it helps them out in the future or not, it's just that feeling that they get from doing that. It's amazing.
That's an excellent point. I really think that, you know, the secret to living is giving. I think people that are generous with their time and with their resources are some of the happiest, most successful people, regardless of what their balance sheet looks like. I think that a great resource for young entrepreneurs today is retirees, people who have been business owners and had successful careers and then have retired. They have time on their hands, and there's a lot of them are making themselves available as volunteers to help young business people to get a good start. And it's great to borrow experience from someone who's got it and is giving it away just to give something back. And I think those are some great resources to look into.
No, and I totally agree. Go back because I mean they have so much to give and they're ready to do it. All you gotta do is ask. Now I got a question going back to when you started the merchant paid cash rewards. How did you come up with that, or how did that just, like, is that like an epiphany thing, or
really was a more of an answer to prayer. I was working with one of the largest life insurance companies in the country at the time, and I was field director and was looking to find ways to help the agents that I was leading to get more appointments, because it's difficult for people in financial services, life insurance, and people who sell investments to get appointments to talk to people about that. It's terribly important. You need to have a financial plan for your life, and it's one of those things where if you don't know where you're going, you're probably not going to, you know, like where you end up.
Right.
So you need a plan, but it's hard to get appointments to sit down with people and talk to them about that. So the problem is, you know, it involves self-discipline, denial, and delayed gratification. And controlling your spending, and who wants to talk about any of those things, you know?
So, oh, no, I don't.
So I was actually on my first mission trip to Mexico, which just happened to be where we were going. And I was laying in the bed of the family that had lent us their home for this trip, thinking about that, and this thought came to me that I'm doing it all wrong. I'm looking at this completely the wrong way, trying to get people to do stuff they don't want to do. They really want to spend all their money and more using credit.
right?
Which is how we get into credit
more
problems,
than you got,
right? Yeah, that's the American dream, right? So I thought, well, but what if we could siphon off a percentage of all the money they're spending and take that and put it into savings and investment and in insurance products to help protect them,
trick them into saving.
Exactly. You just make it automatic and painless and seamless, and so that was kind of the nucleus of the idea, and I took it to the CEO of First Financial Management Corporation, which was at the time they were the largest financial transaction processing company in the world. I just picked up the phone and called the CEO, and just out of the blue, and he took my call.
Oh wow!
And
that does not always happen.
No, no. I got through to him the first time I tried to get in contact with him, and he invited me to a meeting. And there were seven divisions in this company, and the CEOs of all the divisions were there.
Oh,
and so I told him what my idea was when I called him, and he had a team together to hear it, and wrote me a report after that saying this absolutely can be done from a technology perspective within the current financial systems today, and I was highly encouraged by that, and started the company. So that's kind of how that got going. But that model, trying to take the pain and the inconvenience and to make things as simple and easy and automatic as possible, has been a common thread through everything I've done since then and all my other entrepreneurial ventures. In fact, OneCare, exactly the same thing. We automate things. We make it simple and easy. Managing a chronic condition, all the different tasks you have to remember to do all day, every day, there's right. It's like having a part-time job.
Yeah. Yeah.
But if all those processes are automated, and you have the family reinforcing the behavior, and the system is measuring all the results and interpreting them, and if something needs to be done, if a reading is abnormal and then there needs to be some type of intervention, if the system is telling you that and you know what to do because you're certified, it just takes all the mystery, all the uncertainty out of it, automates the processes, makes it simple, and it eliminates a lot of the cost as well.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in. Before we wrap it up, we want to ask a last question. That is, when you were starting out, if there's one thing you know now, what's that one thing you wish you knew when you were starting out? It's a tough one, so you can take your time.
It always costs more than you think, a lot more, and it always takes a lot longer than you think. One thing that I didn't know when I started that I know now is that failure is a part of success. I can't think of many examples of someone who just had a great idea and just everything from that point on just worked perfectly. You know, and there were no setbacks or.
I don't think that happens.
I would say that loss quite often, sacrifice, where you actually suffer consequences for pursuing a dream when it and you run into adversity along the way. Adversity in business is real. It's one of those things you just have to assume that you're going to experience it is the best way to look at it. So I know this is not going to be easy. I know there's going to be setbacks. I know there's going to be things that are going to really waylay us along the way. I could experience loss as a result of this. And I think that's the mature way to look at it. I don't think it's responsible to look at going into business like, hey, I'm going to do my own business and everything's going to be great and I'll be my own boss and everything's wonderful. But I will tell you that it's the most exciting and thrilling thing that I've done as a working person, and it gives you the opportunity to take ideas and to share those ideas with other people and see them get excited about it. I would say another thing is that if you're thinking about starting a business, the struggles that you go through are worth it. you know, don't lose sight of the dream. You really, really hang on. The people that persevere to the end are the ones that get the prize.
Right.
That's totally true. Many times I thought I was at the end of the road with businesses that I started, but by hanging on that extra time, we were able to turn the corner. So, you know, it's always kind of too early to quit. And I would also say that if you're starting something and the primary reason you're doing it is to make money, it's probably not a good idea. There really needs to be some purpose or some cause
or why.
A why. There's got to be a why behind it. You know, who benefits? If you can't think of anything besides yourself that's going to benefit from it, it's probably not a good idea. You're not going to be able to attract a crowd. You're not going to be able to get support
from other people. See through it.
Yeah, see through it, and the things that are going to be destined to have the greatest success are going to be the things that help the most people. The people where it's not what's in it for me. It's what can this do for other people? It is that's what gets others excited and want to help. So
right, you're kind of visualizing the positive impact.
Exactly right.
You know, not just on your wallet. Just
and I think the success comes. Zig Ziglar, who's someone who I respect a lot, he's not with us anymore, but he was a great sales trainer and motivator, and he said that the best way to be successful is to help other people be successful. You know, the best place to get where you want to go is to help other people get where they want to go, and so I think that's a really good principle to hang on to,
like
building
a
business.
One, yeah.
So,
all right. Well, Mr. Gary Allison, before we go here, is there any contact information you'd like to give out so people can reach out to you or One Care for that matter?
Sure. You can reach me at gary.austin@onecare.me. That's my personal email address. For One Care, you would use the email info@onecare.me. And it's spelled out, it's onecare, onecare.me. And it's been a pleasure for me to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, the pleasure's all ours. We're glad to have you on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much. All right, now I'm Adam Wozniak.
I'm Darren Parkinson.
And I'm Ryan Smith.
We are Biz Radio U, pushing knowledge further by spotlighting the best in business.